I'm Rod Thorson. Contact number is 815-223-3093. I think that we are living in a fascinating time, and if we choose to pay attention, we have a first-hand look, a front-row seat to an amazing transition. I mean, think about when the car was introduced, mm-hmm. you know? Even the coal industry, you know, we didn't have to burn whale oil anymore.
Right.
The entire value of the U.S. energy sector, the entire U.S. energy sector, that's every oil company together, the entire sector is down 9% this year. The entire energy sector, fossil fuel energy sector, is worth less than the company Apple.
Is that right?
It's true.
It's been dropping in worth.
ExxonMobil's credit ratings just downgraded. Fracking giant Chesapeake lost 98% of its stock value since 2008. And then we hear this morning about $1 billion investment in solar and wind by mm-hmm. BlackRock, Amazon building a solar array in Lee County. And you can see where this is heading, right?
Yeah.
I think so, too. And I think it is extraordinarily exciting. And you'll hear just ahead from Michael Rucker, the CEO and founder of Scout Clean Energy. They have plans in Putnam and parts of LaSalle County. Call or text with a question, 815-223-3093. But you'll get to meet him on WLPO next.
Member FDIC.
If you like a nice, quiet morning, you may be in the wrong place. Ron and Jeremy on Classic Hits 103.9.
Well, I felt this way for a long time, personally and professionally, that, you know, this is an industry that's needed some disruption, the fossil fuel industry, and it's getting disrupted right now. It's in the early days. I don't know, maybe it'll accelerate. Let's find out a little bit. Good to meet you, Michael Rucker.
Good morning. Thanks, Rod.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Pull the microphone out a little closer to you so we can see you. You are the CEO of Scout Clean Energy, and that's a name that may be new to many, so go ahead and introduce the company. What's Scout Clean Energy all about? Where are you from?
Well, we're based in Boulder, Colorado, but we work all over the United States. Scout is a wind developer, owner, operator. So we're the people who go out and find project opportunities, go through the permitting process, all of the environmental engineering studies, and then we finance, build them, and own them and operate them. So we're involved in every part of the life cycle of a project and, you know, plan to be in communities for decades after a project goes into operation.
I have to say, as a resident here for a couple of decades or over that, I guess, it's been pretty exciting to see the large turbine blades traveling down the interstate. Now, maybe in years past, just recent years, there's been fewer and fewer of those, but you know, the developments that have already taken place, we'd see those large turbine blades coming in here. I always looked at that as wealth coming here or wealth staying here. That's how I've always looked at harvesting wind energy like that. How do you look at the concept itself? You know, there are those who would say, well, you know, where would this industry be without a subsidy, or it's propped up. Sometimes their feelings are grounded in politics, you know. But harvesting the wind, I guess, you know, my grandparents did it on the farm with that old windmill. Seems like as long as the wind keeps blowing, that this thing's going to continue to auger money at us.
It's a great option, particularly for farmers. Those communities really welcome wind energy because it's a crop that you never have to plant but keeps yielding.
Yeah.
And also it just continues for 20 years, 30 years, even 40 years on a particular site. So it's good consistent income, and it makes family farms stronger and really contributes a lot to the community in terms of tax base and employment.
I don't know how familiar you are with the history of Putnam County. Now, recent history is the Putnam County Board, and I know a fair number of the people on it, they've had to make some very hard decisions. Hard decisions when it comes to cutting services back because of some industry. You know, they used to have a steel plant there. They've got an ethanol plant that doesn't want to pay taxes, in my opinion. But these, how do they affect the EAV, the equalized assessed value, whether it's a school or the township or the county? What can be the expectation? Let's just say, you know, if you could, it doesn't cost anything to dream. Let's just say you implement a wind turbine plan like you have. What would it mean to Putnam County?
Typically, when we build a wind farm, we become one of the largest taxpayers in a county, and I think that'll most likely be the case here. The project will yield up to $50 million or more over the project life that'll go to the county. And then, you know, that'll be distributed by the county to, you know, support various services that, that support the county and the townships.
What about individual landowners? What can they expect? Okay, somebody from, they come out and they've got a business card that says Scout Clean Energy on it. What is the standard protocol for going through the contract? I mean, I'm sure you guys do the permitting and things like that, but rent on a footprint, is it pretty standard, pretty common from landowner to landowner, or can it vary?
We try to make an offer that's consistent around the project area, and also within the project area, we try to make sure that everyone who participates has a piece of the project and benefits from it financially. If you're interested in getting more details about the specifics, we have an office in Granville that we've opened, and we'd really invite all of you to come by and ask questions, and we'll go through the lease point by point.
So your office in McCoy Street is just open. You can just walk in and ask some questions. You have somebody there all the time?
We have people who are working for the companies. They're out in the field a lot, actually engaging with landowners directly.
Mm-hmm.
So they're there from time to time. You can certainly call and make an appointment if someone's not there when you drop by.
If you do this, then, how long has your office been there? How long have you had a presence in Granville?
I believe it's been about 3-4 months.
Oh, okay.
So maybe a little longer.
That's good, then. If you could, And I'd appreciate just you being as frank as possible, what has the reaction been from one end of the spectrum to another? I'm sure there's people who say yes with vigor, and then there's other people who are very cautious and might say no with the same enthusiasm. But what, generally speaking, has been the reaction?
We're really excited about the prospects here. We're happy that, you know, we can bring wind energy opportunities to Putnam and LaSalle counties. This area hasn't been the site of a wind farm yet, so there's a lot of opportunity there, and people see the growth in the industry and really, I think, have a right and should mm-hmm. participate in it, so we're kind of bringing that opportunity. In most places we go, we get a lot of support, particularly from the agricultural community, people who rely on county and township services and so on. But there is opposition, and a lot of that is about people just not understanding really what we're trying to do and the benefits that wind energy brings to the community. So we're trying to communicate that right now.
That's good. I think that it's important, too. I mean, obviously, some people are afraid of things they don't understand. But this is not new. I mean, there are wind turbines now from Tiscola all the way to Mendota, get over by Mars Sales, and if you go from Dwight all the way to Champaign, you're going to see them. So we have some experience. But in a county like Putnam, they don't have any yet. Do you have some experience around the country in another county that maybe just didn't have any yet? What was the effect in the near or long term after a wind development?
We're actually just completing a project right now in Indiana. It's a rural community on the Ohio border. Not so close to here, but similar kind of community. Part of the same electricity grid, which for us is an important detail in terms of the project planning. And that community took a hard look at the project, and there was some opposition to the project, but in the end, people realized that not only would the agricultural community benefit directly, but in the long term, there would be construction jobs, long-term operations jobs, and significant revenue for the county that would make it stronger.
Yeah, it's interesting. Can you, then in LaSalle County, is it just the panhandle that would be part of this proposed development?
I'm here to learn about the community and more of the details, so I'm not the one who knows.
Like from Eden Township south would be Tonica, Osage would be south of there, too, and it's a panhandle that extends south just on the east side of Putnam. So, you know, these communities around here, and I'm the same way, I don't see a county line as a border. You know, people in farm, you know, they farm in one county or two or three counties in some cases, you know. So I just wondered how large the footprint could be if you were able to develop it to the extent that you want.
From north-south, it's basically from Granville to McNabb, and I'm not entirely sure about the east-west dimensions in terms of what we're planning for, but it's roughly 30,000 acres. And ultimately would have between 66 and 100 wind towers when it's built out, depending on the final size.
East of the Illinois River, then, I assume. All of it east of the Illinois River. This is Michael Rucker. He's the CEO and founder of Scout Clean Energy. Now, when you say founder, how many years, when did this start for you?
Well, I've been in the industry since 1994, so a long time, and I've worked for many of the larger companies that work in the industry. I founded this company along with another between the years 2014 and 2016, and largely taking a team, and a lot of them are working in this community now who've been together as far back as 2010
mm-hmm.
or so.
Okay.
And this one was put together specifically to be an owner-operator, so it was founded in 2016, and then we became a portfolio company and received an investment from a private equity infrastructure fund, which basically gave us the capital to allow us to be an owner-operator.
Interesting. And this goes back a number of years. We may actually have a mutual friend. There was a Stefan Noe, I believe, and his friend Mike Calicrate. He and I are very good friends. He's from Colorado, too. So we may have run into some of the same people over the years. But this is an interesting thing. Now, as you look forward, how do you see the structure of these wind turbine developments in terms of their ownership and what it will mean long-term to the community? Because sometimes there's some concerns, too, about, well, what are we going to do after the proposed life of these is over? And I don't even know how many years that would be. But there's some of those objections that come up that way.
Well, one thing that we're seeing in the wind industry is demand for renewable energy increases as the scale of projects are getting larger.
Right.
And that's driven both by the size of the projects, but also by the size of the turbines themselves. We're generating more electricity, and consequently there's a lot more capital that needs to be invested in the projects to build them.
Mm-hmm.
So really, wind projects are owned by large institutional investors. In our case, our fund is basically also funded by pension funds around the world that put money into them. So the large institutional investors basically provide a very stable environment for the projects over their operating life.
Interesting.
Wind farms don't really ever get picked up and moved away, and
sure.
I've never seen them close down either. Once they go into operation, there's no fuel cost. So
right.
Really you just have to pay to operate the turbines, and they generate electricity, and most of that is contracted over contracts that can be decades long. So they're a very stable environment for investors, and likewise it becomes a very stable stream of income for the people who participate in the project in the local community.
Yeah, that's good too. I just see so many benefits to this, and people who have listened for a long time know that I've always been on your side on this too. I acknowledge that there are some challenges. I acknowledge that there are some questions about them long term, but some of the wind turbines that we've had around here have been planted now for over 10 years. Landowners have been beneficiaries of rent for 10 years. Schools have been beneficiaries of the tax base for 10 years. I would think that by now, after a decade, if there were some problems or some issues, that they would have arisen. And I really can't say that anybody's been able to step forward with any credibility and say, well, hey, I'm not sure if this is a great idea or not. I mean, but you've been in this since 94, 25 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So where do you see it going?
I really just continue to see growth on the horizon for renewable energy generally. I think the mix of renewable generation sources is going to, like everything, change over time. We'll see a mix of other technologies like solar technology becoming prevalent, particularly in various parts of the country that have a lot of solar resource.
Mm-hmm.
But wind, particularly in the Midwest, is the most economical source of energy on the grid, period, right now, compared to any source.
Now, this is way over my head. I'm not a thermodynamics professor by any means, but the electricity that's produced, or I should say harvested here with the wind generated here, where would it end up? Where would it go? Who would it benefit?
It actually benefits anyone who's connected to the electricity grid.
Okay.
So it goes into the local grid, and you basically receive electrons from the power plant that's closest to your plug in your house. But the way it's paid for is through complex contractual relationships with large utilities and buyers of energy on a wholesale basis. And those can be in various parts of the country, remote from here.
Sure.
On this particular grid, and this is one reason why we've come to this area, it's part of PJM, which includes not only the Chicago area, but also extending all the way to the Mid-Atlantic and East Coast.
Really?
Yeah. So there's a lot of renewable energy demand within that large footprint, and
mm-hmm.
that creates a special opportunity for a project located here to find very broad markets for renewable energy. And what's great about this particular location and why we're so excited to be here is this is where that Eastern electricity grid and Midwestern electricity grid connects with really high quality windy Midwestern weather.
So I hear that is true, that there are some places that are just windier than others.
Absolutely, and that's where we go. That's our business.
So if you're talking about supplying electricity to the Eastern Seaboard, Kansas wouldn't just not be as good an option as Illinois or Indiana. Is that
what you're
saying?
That's driven by really transmission infrastructure. Yeah. Kansas is very windy, definitely.
I'm sure, yeah.
But we don't have the lines that can take that power to the places where we need them. So here we're in a unique position where we have that windy terrain, friendly agricultural communities that welcome wind energy, mm-hmm. but also access to that broader market for the energy.
Yeah, I think it's exceptional, and I'm proud of myself too for getting through the entire interview without asking you about wind and noise cancer.
we get those questions.
I bet you do.
Yeah, but like you mentioned, wind, the industry has really matured and the technology is well known now, and most of them have been answered to some extent. So
I don't see piles of dead birds underneath them. I've been underneath them. There's no birds.
No, we do really extensive studies counting birds and bats and so on, so we can make sure we site turbines so we avoid them.
Let me ask you this. I've always wanted to ask somebody in your business this, and by the way, this is Michael Rucker with Scout Clean Energy, developing a wind turbine development in Putnam and part of LaSalle County. What is it about the turbine's color? If it's in the sun, it's bright white like a sheet of paper, and then there's something about the hue of it that if it's in the shade, it turns grayish. So it's actually less visible. It's as if the color of it, is there something special about the what they paint it with or how they construct it to make it a little less visible based on the conditions, the sun, the shade?
Well, I've seen that effect, and, wind turbines aren't really chameleons. They don't change their color, but they appear to.
I know.
And so I just see that as like one of the magic things that happens that I don't fully understand about the technology.
Well, we'll take it. But I don't mind looking at them myself either, especially the flashing lights. I'll sit out at night outside of Grand Ridge and see the flashing lights. I like it, yeah. So
about the lights, some of the wind farms that we've been installing recently actually have systems that only turn on the lights when you have aircraft or other.
Oh, no kidding.
Coming closer to the wind farm, yeah.
Right.
I think over time we're going to see that technology become more common on sites, on new sites that are built around the country.
Let me ask you this, since you're an expert in the industry too. There are different structures of wind turbines. There's some that look like a fan, like the traditional one. Then there's others that are kind of vertical that spin at a different rate. Do you know anything about the different types, the different designs of the wind turbines that harvest that energy?
Oh, we've seen a lot of them over the last 20, 30 years. Vertical axis wind turbines just haven't been as efficient as the horizontal ones, the ones that you see commonly.
Okay.
And that's for a variety of reasons. The industry is pretty much locked into the horizontal design, and I don't think on a wide commercial scale you're going to see much different, at least in the next few years.
Very interesting. Questions, 815-223-3093. That's Michael Rucker. If you can hang around a while, you're welcome to do that. We can talk a little bit more after news, weather, and sports on Classic. It's 103.9 WLPO.
Ron Thornton. Listen wherever you go. FM 103.9, AM 1220. Streaming at classichits1039wlpo.com. And with the free WLPO app for your mobile device.
943, I'm Rod Thorson. Classic Hits 103.9 WLPO. Scout Clean Energy has an office in McCoy Street in Granville. So you welcome them to town. If you have any questions, of course, it's an open-door policy, I've learned. And Michael Rucker is here in the studio. We thought we'd find out a little bit more about him and the company. And so we've done that early in this last hour. And, of course, it's mostly positive, I think, economically for the counties, townships, schools, any EAV-supported bodies. You can ask a question on the text line at 223-3093. But, Michael, you have a lot of experience with this dating back to the mid-90s, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm old enough, and so are you, I think, I'm assuming, that you're old enough to remember, say, when we first went into Kuwait, we were going to work for the Middle East, we're going to help to, secure an oil supply, an energy supply. I get philosophical every once in a while. Now, you didn't come here to talk philosophically, but if you allow me to do this, I want your basic feelings about this. We're not, in my opinion, the leader in terms of wind or solar or renewable energy in the world. There are other places that are ahead of us. Instead of expending massive amounts of, whether it's arms or people, money in the Middle East to secure an energy supply that's finite, fossil fuels, where would we be today if we had spent $1 trillion working toward a more renewable future? Can we get caught up? Are we going to get caught up at the pace that we are on today? Can you address or think out loud about some of those things that I've just tossed out there?
Devoting those kinds of resources to renewable energy would have created better opportunities to build out the transmission grid that could basically string the wires to where the wind is, particularly in the middle parts of the country. This area is blessed with a pretty extensive transmission infrastructure, but that doesn't really necessarily include what we call the Saudi Arabia of wind.
Yeah.
Our own Saudi Arabia really extends, you know, from the Canadian border all the way down to Mexico through the middle part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an opportunity that, you know, in the long run could still be developed, but we've kind of neglected, I think, over the last 20 years.
Yeah, well, we just neglected that. In my opinion, I agree with you, and also focused our priorities somewhere else, and that is to, halfway around the world with people and treasure and those types of things. Now, I'm old enough to remember. I'm 54, on the farm, growing up in Northwest Grundy County, the beginning of the ethanol industry. And everybody had on their grain trucks these bumper stickers. I don't know if you remember these bumper stickers that said, "No tanks or rack, I use ethanol." Now, you know, probably a good idea at the time. 25 years later, you know, we were told back 25, 30 years ago that if you raised corn, you were going to be no different than an oil shake, right? Well, it hasn't quite worked out that way. It's a market for the corn. There's no getting around it. I mean, there's an extra market. There's an extra buyer out there, which is beneficial. But it certainly hasn't caused the Thorson farm or any of our neighbors to be to be oil shakes. Not that wind turbines might or could do the same thing, but clearly it's harvesting energy that's already there. We don't have to plant it. So it seems to me that it makes a lot of sense in that way. Is that the reason that you think it's probably going to have some staying power?
Yeah, absolutely. Wind energy, when it's developed on a farm, doesn't really interrupt or change any of the agriculture that was there before. So it's really an addition in terms of a revenue source for a farmer or a community. You can go ahead and continue to sell your corn to whoever would like to buy it or, mm-hmm. or to an ethanol plant, really. It's just kind of an additive that creates more strength for the farm and the family that owns it.
I do know a person who does some aerial application of some chemicals. He's, of course, not too keen on the idea of wind turbines. They do make ground sprayers. I remind him every once in a while, but he likes to fly, too. But there are times, though, that there's... How are these set up? They're not haphazard, I'm sure. They're maybe even allow, in some cases, people to use aerial spraying.
Yeah, I've actually seen aerial spraying operations within large wind farms.
Have you?
Yeah. The distance between the turbines can support it in some cases. Obviously, it makes it a more complicated kind of environment, and the people who do this kind of work need to be comfortable with it.
Right.
But they can be compatible.
Interesting. So how do you feel? Now, this is getting real philosophical. How do you feel about climate change? Just how do you feel? What's your general feeling as not only the CEO of Scout Clean Energy, but as a human inhabitant of this planet with us?
Well, climate change is actually ultimately the motivation that got me into the industry.
Really?
So way back in the late 90s, I was actually involved in the climate change negotiations from the Kyoto Protocol through
really?
The first 5 years. I worked on that. That was my actual job. And in that process, I found it to be so bureaucratic and felt like it was going nowhere.
Hmm.
And I really felt like I had to come and work on things that were more tangible, really building solutions that could help to, you know, reduce emissions of CO2 and carbon dioxide. So I am very motivated by climate change, but that's not the only benefit you see from a wind farm, ultimately, but it's an important one.
It's an interesting lesson, I think. I've got young kids, most of them, not all, but four kids, they're socially conscious. I call kids socially conscious today. They care about people, animals, the environment, things like that. And you can spend all day on Facebook complaining about it if you want to, or you can take some action, get involved. And it sounds like that's something that you did early on.
Yeah, I actually was first involved in the climate change negotiations and the ability to maybe reduce emissions through that kind of multilateral negotiations format. But, for me, that led to doing something really putting steel into the ground, so to speak.
Interesting. You know, over the course of months, maybe a couple of years, you don't see a big change take place. But think about this. You know, it was Al Gore, right? You know, Al Gore first started talking. What was the name of his book? It'll come to
Inconvenient Truth.
Inconvenient Truth. Yeah, and it was about how we're treating the planet. And think about that. I'll bet that's been 25 years. I'll bet it has been at least that since that happened.
Yeah,
right?
I think Inconvenient Truth was his film, and he's already done a sequel.
That's
so
right.
I got an update on
it. That's exactly right.
And things have not gotten better in that period of time.
Isn't that interesting? And at that time, he was seen as a radical. I mean, that was a radical concept, wasn't it? The theory that, oh, my God, we're having some impact here, and we need to clean up a little bit. But now it's mainstream, at least, isn't it? I see that out here on the out here in middle America. There's a few deniers still, but generally speaking, it's mainstream.
Generally, the scientific consensus for climate change is very strong, 97%, they say. But you know, the real issue is how people in our communities see it, and you know, a wind farm has significant benefits in terms of reducing CO2 emissions, but mm-hmm. there are other ones as well, just particulate emissions, the kind of, SOx, NOx, things that are emitted by fossil fuel generation,
right.
For example, are completely abated by a renewable energy source. So you see that benefit at all, as well as, you know, the economic benefits. So it's not only climate change, but that's, you know, an important contributor. It really, if we can do this at low cost with the least costly, you know, source of energy on the grid,
right.
Why not? I'm really not losing anything.
I could tell just by having a short conversation with you that there had to be more to it than just the business of wind, that you were motivated in that way. I've heard from Special Agent Keith, who's up in northern Bureau County already this morning. He said, I'm listening now. This guy's fascinating. So I could tell it that you felt that way. Let's go to Progressive Jim down in Ancona. Jim, in Livingston County, there's some wind turbines over, but they're over on the east side. You're in the western part of Livingston County. What's your thought on this? You got a question for Michael Rucker?
I do have a question, Rod. I do think the renewable energy is a good idea. And I noticed there's some companies that send you out an offer where you can purchase your electricity through clean energy, i.e. around here wind power. The only thing about that, I personally have done the math on it. I haven't seen any kind of a cost advantage on it. So I think it might go over a little better if for some way they could say, hey, we've got a little lower cost of production here. We're going to pass it on to you, the ratepayer. And I think that might get more people on board. Any thoughts on that?
Good question, Jim. Let's take that question so we don't run out of time. Thanks for calling the show. Appreciate it. Michael?
Well, we generate wholesale energy that's sold to utilities and mm-hmm. other large-scale industrial users. We're not the people who deliver the energy to your home for your use or even your small business. So that is a local utility that controls the wires, and it's a regulated business, and it's very difficult for us to pass those savings directly to landowners. Unfortunately, we just can't string a wire from the turbine to your house. I wish we could, but it's not really technically feasible.
In the regulated environment, I also find it kind of interesting that the large utility companies in this state, they have embraced, haven't they? They have embraced the concept of using these sources as they may call them alternative now, maybe they'll be more mainstream in the future, as a way of pumping electrons into the grid, haven't they?
They have, actually, and now that renewable energy is the least expensive source of energy on the grid,
it has become that, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. We've reached that threshold. Matter of fact, next year, in the year 2021, I'm thinking 2 years ahead, in 2021 will be the first year that renewable energy production exceeds that of coal in the United States, which
is amazing.
Kind of an amazing event, really.
It is.
Long-term.
It's been great to have you here. If you don't mind, we'd still like to continue to keep the lines open to talk to you and your staff. If you have any questions there on McCoy Street in Granville about Scout Clean Energy, and I wish you the best with your project.
Thank you, Rob.
That's CEO Michael Rucker of Scout Clean Energy in Putnam and parts of LaSalle County.
There's more Rod to come on Classic Hits 103.9 WLPO.